Hello and welcome to the debate. I'm Kabet Afwai. Jordan has experienced parliamentary elections. Tribal leaders, pro-regime loyalists, and independent businessmen are set to sweep an election which was boycotted by the Muslim Brotherhood. In this debate, we ask, what good will this do for an uprising in the works for years if the new parliament will be dominated by loyalists who will carry out King Abdullah II's orders?
Votes are being counted at a polling station in Jordan. The Jordanians went to the polls in their country's general election on Wednesday. Latest election results show a big win by tribal leaders, pro-regime loyalists, and independent businessmen. Jordan's Independent Election Commission claims more than 56% of registered voters turned out to vote. The opposition rejects the claim, saying the turnout was much lower, only 24%.
We doubt that this percentage is accurate. This number is illogical and unrealistic. The fact that this number was so high makes our doubts even greater.
Analysts believe the parliament will be dominated by loyalists who will carry out the monarch's orders. The pro-reform opposition led by the Muslim Brotherhood boycotted the election. It disputes the results, calling the election a fraud.
I think any election in the absence of national consensus is not successful. Any election with negative practices in view of the public, such as obtaining political money, open voting, continuation of the election campaign after the legal time, all of such activities are negative indications.
Jordan's opposition says King Abdullah II's promises of reform fall far short of true democratic change. Jordan has been the scene of anti-government protests since 2011. The protests also target King Abdullah himself. Demonstrators often say they want a constitutional monarchy with a ceremonial king. Jordanians also have a range of other concerns. They are angry over the dire economic situation and rampant corruption among officials, including one of King Abdullah's in-laws. They are also dissatisfied with the government over its peace treaty with the Israeli regime. Islamic groups have been leading the movement of the Jordanian people. They attract attention as they are opposed to extremism and say they want to engage in politics through democratic means.
Well, let's get this debate going. Let me introduce our guest. Sharif Nashashibi is the chairman and co-founder of the Arab Media Watch, and he joins us from London. And joining us later would be Nabil Ali from the International, who's an international relations officer, joining us from Amman, and also Nasser Al-Omari, who's a writer and political commentator, to be joining us from New York. Well, Sharif Nashashibi, let me address the major concern that is existing here, and that's the fairness of the vote, because irregularities have been cited. You have the Electoral Commission citing 56% turnout, and yet the Muslim Brotherhood says it's only a little over 16%. This obviously puts the question of fairness into the picture.
Well, you have a mixed picture here. I mean, the EU observer mission has said that by and large there were no major issues in terms of carrying out the election. The opposition has cried fraud already. And when I was in Jordan last week, and there were reports in the press of vote buying and things like that. So there have been allegations. The EU has said it's been carried through pretty well. So it's difficult to say yet, I think, how that's going to play out. I mean, this was always going to be a likelihood, given the tensions in the run-up to the elections, that the opposition were going to cry fraud. But whether it's true and whether it's widespread enough to call into question the entire electoral process, this is something we have to wait and see.
Well, let's break this down a little bit and really like to get a picture of what's going on in Jordan. And the viewers obviously are interested in this also. Among the largest Islamic groups is the Muslim Brotherhood. They called for a boycott. Mohammed Abu Rahman, he's a researcher at the University of Jordan Center for Strategic Studies. And he says that because of the turnout being good, the Islamists got a slap in the face. And that's a quote from him. Was this a defeat for the Islamic groups, in particular the Muslim Brotherhood?
Well, I have to say, you know, it's interesting because when I was in Jordan last week, I interviewed numerous people about their view on reforms and the elections. And, you know, every single person expressed, you know, real pessimism about the election and the reform process. And no one I spoke to said that they would be voting. So I was surprised that the turnout was as high as 56.5%. Now, the opposition is saying that that's an inflated figure. It's citing much lower figures, but you know, I was surprised. If the figure of 56.5% is accurate, then yes, I would say the boycott had largely failed. I think they were hoping for a turnout of less than 50%, and that hasn't happened. So I think that would be seen as a defeat for the boycott call if that figure is accurate.
Well, many agree with that point of view, and as a matter of fact, they are more worried about who is going to be coming into power. We have one analyst that has stated the king did not cede any of his powers to parliament, which anyway will be dominated by loyalists, so his orders will be implemented in the end, citing some previous MPs are now in this parliament, combined with the businessmen. That's not an agenda for change or any intent for reform, is it?
Well, this put the opposition in a very difficult position because it could either take part in the elections and try and change the system from within, or it could boycott the elections. Now, the boycott pretty much ensured that the next parliament will, of course, be dominated by loyalists because the opposition didn't take part. So I'm not sure that the opposition can cry foul that the result is going to be the domination of parliament by the loyalists, because they must have known that, obviously, if they're boycotting the elections, that their representatives would not end up in parliament.
Right.
So it was a difficult situation. You know, they don't want to take part in a process they don't agree with, but then if they don't take part, they're guaranteeing that the loyalists are going to have a very strong hold on parliament.
Well, let me bring our guest from Amman, Nabil Ali. Nabil Ali, Independent Election Commission, 56% in terms of the turnout, but yet we have the Muslim Brotherhood disputing it at 16%. What is the case, since you are in Amman? Nabil Ali, if you have us.
Can you repeat that question?
Sure. The question is about the turnout. 56%, the commission has said, or what the opposition, in particular Muslim Brotherhood, has said, not the case, 16%.
Well, at the Civil Coalition for Monitoring the 2013 elections, we have deployed observers, short-term observers across the country. We've covered about 3,000 polling stations. And the figures we have received from our observers are actually in close proximity with what the IEC had announced.
Sharif Nashashibi, there you have Nabil Ali, who's an international relations officer, saying the case of, and compared to what you said that you were there recently, doesn't really read with what people there were saying. Let's expand a little bit more about what the reforms, which haven't been that much, that have been promised by the king. He plans for the first time to consult MPs before naming a premier. Now, the logic behind that, some are saying, is not democratic. The Muslim Brotherhood has criticized that and saying that, any naming of a prime minister should be done by a national consensus. So is that really a reform motion there by the king?
Well, you know, to an extent, it's a reform, yes, because beforehand, the prime minister was appointed solely by the king at his discretion, whereas now the prime minister will be chosen from the biggest party or the biggest bloc in the parliament. So that's a reform in the sense that it's a change from the previous situation. However, the problem here now is because the opposition has boycotted the vote, basically the prime minister is likely to be chosen from a loyalist bloc, And this is going to feed further grievances in terms of, you know, people seeing the process as simply rubber stamping the authority of the king. So this is going to put the king in a difficult situation, because the parliament, as it stands, because of the boycott, is not really representative of the whole cross section of Jordanian society. Now part of the reforms is that, you know, in situations like this, you know, he will talk to parliament as a whole, but I don't think this is going to be a problem that will be solved by that. This is the boycott has put the king in a difficult situation, and he has to be careful to be seen to appointing someone who can be a consensus builder. But this looks unlikely. It would be very difficult to find a candidate who would be a consensus builder. And as such, I think this might feed further public anger that the process is just a legitimization of the status quo.
Well, we're going to talk about why there has been successive prime ministers appointed by King Abdullah. But before that, let's look at some of the viewer comments that have been posted on the Press TV website, the Facebook address. And I'd like to read some of these comments by the viewers. Looking at the page right now, the first one by Yatol Altan. He has said, a sham, Jordan is a small pawn of Western policy. Scrolling down the page, Diego Cruz Diaz. There is nothing wrong with the name of democracy in a country that has a king. King is a dictator, a ruler. Fahad Al-Ghalibi. Yes, Jordan elections should be a hope for reforms to ease people's anger over the economy and corruption, but as the main opposition group's boycott of the polls, it seems the crisis will remain. Another viewer, Menal Ashamari, Jordan is a test for the Arab kingdoms. If it skips an uprising, the others will skip also. Saudi Arabia is transferring huge money to keep these kingdoms in place. And finally, Rafat Hajan, Jordan has some summary democracy. What you say about Saudi Arabia? Just some of the comments there on our Facebook page. Now, Nabil Ali, if you can tell us why King Abdullah has, since coming to power, on an average, replaced the prime minister every 2 years since his accession. Why is that the case? Why doesn't it seem like he can get the proper figure in place for prime minister that is doing something for the people to the satisfaction of the people?
Well, the political reform process is not just a political reform process in this part of the world. It's a process that includes social change as well. And it's known that social change takes time. So in order to go through a reform, it's not just a matter of introducing legislations or a matter of changing the legislative system that you have. We've seen an improvement in this election from the previous ones with the introduction of the Independent Electoral Commission, but we have still noticed over the past or over today and the past couple of weeks some violations that were done by the people. Mainly through vote buying and the use of political money. These have been notes that were made by the Civil Coalition for Monitoring the 2013 elections here in Jordan, which I'm speaking on behalf right now.
Well, I don't quite understand. First, when I asked you about this, you said that there wasn't any chances for this discrepancy, but you're saying that now there are irregularities. Well, let's move on now. Let me bring in Nasser Al-Omari, who's a PhD, a writer and political commentator from New York. Dr. Al-Omari, I'd like to find out about what is going on regarding the protests that are happening in Jordan. They've been going on for 2 years now, and we're looking at the Muslim Brotherhood that has boycotted these elections. We're looking at the protests that have happened prior to this, called by the Muslim Brotherhood, where people showed up in the thousands. How do you see this parliamentary election?
Well, it's a continuation of the same policies, unfortunately. The king has had promised reform 2 years ago when the Arab Spring broke out. And the people of Jordan have been extremely patient because he promised to introduce all kinds of reforms, including reforms to the constitution. And what we have seen is basically delays and tactics to make sure that the king maintains his grip on power. The people of Jordan are sick and tired of the king and the loyalists dictating to the Jordanian people how to move on with their political system, how to move on with developing the economy. The fact of the matter is, this law, the election law, was tailored to fit the king and to fit the loyalists, who are, by the way, engaged in corruption, including the king's in-laws who are being tried as we speak right now for corruption. So the all Jordanians, not just the Muslim Brotherhood, are tired of these tactics, and actually it's reminiscent of the tactics of other regimes that have fallen. We need true reform. Jordanians need real reform, and they haven't seen it yet.
Well, that's an interesting question you posed there, Omar Nashashibi. Sharif Nashashibi, when we look at other uprisings and revolutions, in particular since the Arab Spring broke out, the so-called Arab Spring, how has King Abdullah managed to keep Jordan under his power?
It would seem that he has followed the model of Morocco, which is to effectively introduce enough reforms to keep the people quiet without ceding any real power. Now, this has worked so far in Morocco, and I think King Abdullah is hoping that this will work in Jordan. But there is a real sense among ordinary Jordanians that, you know, whatever reforms have been done is too little and too late. And this is the crux of the problem. There is so much cynicism now because reforms have taken so long, and what reforms are widely seen as not enough. This is the dilemma now. Is the king effectively has a power base, and that power base doesn't want him to cede too much power because obviously they benefit from the king's patronage. But then on the other hand, you have a huge cross-section of Jordanian society that is getting increasingly fed up with the situation, not just politically, but economically as well. And there isn't any sense that in the near term we're going to overcome any of these political or economic problems that Jordan is facing. It could very, very well be that we are going to see increasing tensions now following these elections between the pro-reform movement and the loyalist base.
Well, let me ask you, Nabil Ali, you had the former premier who talked about these elections and said that there was no real will to reform. He's the former premier. You say there are progress and reforms made. This runs against what he's saying. Why is that?
Are you asking me?
No. Well, this is Nabil Ali. Go ahead, Nabil Ali.
Yeah, let me just clarify one point. I'm here speaking on behalf of the Civil Coalition for Monitoring the Elections. The work that we do is purely technical and does not fall within any political agenda or any political preference. What we can say about this matter that we are seeing an improvement in the electoral process from previous elections. There are more steps that could be taken to further ensure the integrity and the transparency of the electoral process, definitely. And in the past 4 weeks or in the past 4 months, since the registration of voters had started back in August, we have encouraged the government and the Independent Electoral Commission to take additional steps to what they have been providing in order to ensure the integrity of the electoral process furthermore.
Okay. Dr. Al-Omari, one of the countries that has been watching Jordan very closely is the United States. The beginning of Arab Spring 2011 and onwards, King Abdullah II made numerous trips to the U.S. How much does him staying in power a vital interest for the U.S. and, of course, the aid that comes from the U.S. to Jordan?
Well, the United States has expressed interest in the reforms that the king has presented in Jordan. And interestingly enough, also the State of Israel has expressed support for the King of Jordan. So we are talking about a monarch who is extremely close to the West, and who does not really close to the wishes and aspirations of the Jordanian people. And that is the problem. The problem is a king who has encouraged these loyalists with an electoral law that makes it very, very easy for them to win elections. For example, a whole city is represented by four MPs. On the other hand, you have a small town that has a similar number. So we are talking about half or even more of the Jordanians who are not represented, causing a great deal of grievance and a great deal of trouble, because Jordanians are left out of the process, and corrupt figures are encouraged and hand-picked and groomed for power in Jordan. And it's, as I said before, the United States may be happy with a pro-Western government, but they were also happy with the Mubarak regime, and that regime has fallen. The King of Jordan needs to realize that alienating more than half of the Jordanian people is not conducive to development, is not conducive to political stability. So I think 2013 will be a turning point for Jordan.
Do you agree, Sharif Nashashibi, 2013, turning point for Jordan?
I think so. I think the situation is coming to a head. There is a critical mass now of people who are just increasingly fed up with the kind of the stagnant situation, really, in Jordan. And, you know, just recently, in the last couple of months, you know, fuel prices have gone up, you know, a lot because of the removal of subsidies to get an IMF loan. Other basic prices, you know, for instance, the food have gone up, and this could well get worse in this coming year. And if people see that these elections are just more of the same, that there is just a rubber stamping of the status quo, then I think there will be more protests and probably an escalation of these protests. So I think certainly this year Jordan is going to see a lot of movement and a lot more media attention, I think, in tandem with that.
Same question to you, Nabil Ali, given the fact that you're in Oman. How do you see 2013 for the country?
Well, definitely 2013 presents a great opportunity for further reforms to be implemented. We will have a new parliament next month, probably, and I think the people should express their opinion and get their message through to whoever is sitting in parliament. Let them know that you need to tell our story. You need to say what we want you to say.
Right.
We need you to decide.
Let me bring in. Sorry to jump in. Let me bring in Dr. Al-Amari. Dr. Al-Amari, I saw you shaking your head. 30 seconds less. Tell us what you're thinking.
Well, the last time the election was rigged by the admission of the government itself. These people who have some of the MPs who have been elected actually spent some time in jail just 3 days ago. They got out of jail today because they were involved in rigging the election. This is a regime that is entrenched in power, that is determined at
staying. Sorry, I got to jump in. Unfortunately, we're out
in
of
power
time
at any
for
cost.
This debate. I do apologize. Let me thank our guest from Oman, Nabil Ali, International Relations Officer. From London, Sharif Nashashibi, chairman and co-founder of Arab Media Watch. And you were just listening to Dr. Nasser Al-Omari, who's a writer and political commentator, and he's also a PhD. Thank you for watching another edition of The Debate. Do send us any comments or questions, newsroom@presstv.ir. From Mikhail Takwe and the entire team in the capital, Tehran, it's goodbye.